Hello, everyone, and welcome to Dallas Hoops Fancast, a podcast for Mavs fans. I'm your host, Sydney, and I'm here with my co-host, Martin.
Hey, guys.
You can follow the show on Twitter at Dallas Hoops Cast. You can follow me on Twitter at underscore Sydney Myers. Martin is at Martin L. Myers. Remember, you can listen to new episodes and read exclusive articles at DallasHoopsCast.com. The Mavs just lost a close one to the Clippers, 110-107. We're going to share our thoughts. Obviously, a lot of things happened in this game. And then we're going to go on to a couple of segments talking about other things, an interview with Mark Cuban that he did, talking about Porzingis' injury. We record all those segments before the game. But just talking about the game, obviously the big story, the Dwight Powell injury. The team confirmed that it was an Achilles injury. Shams from The Athletic said his sources said it's a torn Achilles.
Which his source is watching the video and seeing his calf pop.
I mean, we don't know that for sure.
There's no way the Mavs would release a torn Achilles without an MRI.
Yeah, yeah, true. So anyways, that's what he's saying. But as far as we know, it's an Achilles injury. And it looked painful.
Like, I've never seen the calf do that before. Like, I've seen other players sustain a torn Achilles.
Yeah.
But I've never seen, like, where you actually saw a pop.
Yeah.
I'm not speculating. I don't want to speculate. I don't know why that's such a big deal.
Well, because you don't want to start a rumor that's not true.
Yeah, yeah. Well, Shams apparently can do that.
But, yeah, so it's, I mean, it looked really painful.
Bad. Yes.
Yeah. So I don't know. You know, Shams is saying it's a torn Achilles. Whatever it is, it looked really painful to the point where he was helped off the court. It just went straight to the locker room. And it sucks. I mean, the Mavericks just got Porzingis back. And now Powell is injured. And, you know, I was talking, like, right after it happened. Like, I don't know if he had been playing more with Porzingis out. Like, I don't know, maybe those extra minutes caught up to his body. I don't really know. I mean, he's a young guy. He's 28. Like, it's not the kind of thing where he has a lot of mileage on him. He's never really been a high minutes guy. But yeah, when it happened, he looked like he was in a lot of pain. Mm-hmm. It looked like an agonizing injury. And of course, all the teammates were around him, which was good to see. I've always thought Powell was a really nice guy. I mean, obviously, we're not the biggest fans of him as a player.
We don't even need to talk about that. That's not even important now, you know.
But it's just, you know, since we have said those things, now if we talk about him, people are going to be like, well, you guys didn't like him anyway, which I think that's, like, you know, people on Twitter are like, yeah, all you Powell haters, are you happy now? And
no.
It's like, yeah, it's like, dude, using Dwight Powell, I tweeted this, using Dwight Powell's injury as a way to get back at people is just low.
Yeah.
Like, don't do that. I mean, it sucks. You never want to see a player get injured, especially like him. He seems like a really nice guy. He does a lot of stuff for the community, which I think is even more, it says even more about him considering how much flack he gets from fans online. It's devastating for him, devastating for the team. I don't know how they're going to adjust.
Well, I wouldn't be surprised if, let's say, for example, he's out for an extended period of time, maybe the season. I wouldn't be surprised now if the Mavericks do make a deal to get an extra big. I'm not saying it's going to be anything splashy. It'll probably be nothing,
just
really.
Just something to cover.
Yeah, because you don't want to go with Porzingis, Maxi, and Boban. Boban, as much as I love him, he just cannot play that consistently in a lot of minutes.
That's what I was going to say. I don't know if he can handle that many minutes.
So you probably need to bring in another big that can handle some minutes. So we'll see what happens. It's unfortunate. I don't know what they're going to do. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I don't even know what to say about it because it's not like, you know, when Luka sprained his ankle, like it was obviously a really bad sprain. Mm-hmm.
But you knew he was coming back.
You knew he was going to come back. He'll recover. It just kind of sucked that he was out. But this, it's like, it's a different level because that affects a player so much that it's, it, I don't know. There's
the torn Achilles. Well, you know what? We'll worry about the reaction that it's going to be for
what
Powell
it is.
Once we find out what it actually is, because I don't want to sit here and do a whole pod on how player that has a torn Achilles, how they struggle to come back.
When maybe it's not that.
Yeah.
But whatever it is, it's something with his Achilles, which is really difficult to recover from whatever kind of injury it is. And so my point was like, there's a different mood in the air whenever it's
something
an injury
that's
that bad. Yeah. So I feel bad for him. I know, you know, he has his teammates, they have a great training staff. I've heard that he has a really great work ethic. So I know he'll have a lot of support and work hard, but it sucked. It sucked to see it. I mean, he looked like he was in a ton of pain. So, and the Mavs, they kind of struggled for a lot of this game. I think they were down at some points, like I think
up to
12
14.
To 14 points. Yeah. They eventually came back, finished the game 110-107. They ended up losing. And in a lot of ways, it was the same story that we see in a lot of games. The Clippers played really physical defense and the officiating was terrible. And I think for some of it, they let those things get to them. Towards the end, they kind of played through it. I mean, they made a comeback and had a chance to tie the game in the final like 30 seconds or something. So I think they found a way to play through it. But for a while, it was really frustrating to see the same thing that we see in every loss pretty much.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not sure I agree 100%. I thought the Mavericks really did play well tonight. In fact, I thought they played well late in the game. The problem was Kawhi just made every single shot.
Well, yeah, it's finals and MVP.
And when we had an opportunity to tie it, that wide open three by Hardaway, we just missed. And that's been the problem with the Mavericks in the clutch, is we're just missing our shots, and the other team is making their shots. I mean, Landry Shamet, with all due respect, you know, he killed us in the clutch tonight, and he's nobody. But that's the thing. Teams are hitting those shots against us. We have to find a way to do a better job defensively.
Yeah.
And we're just not making the shots that we need to make. But overall, I thought they played well. I thought they responded well when they went down by 14. I thought they fought back. And I thought they fought really, really hard. The problem is the Clippers are just a better team than they are.
Well, and I think that was the conclusion we came to the first time they played the Clippers. Mm-hmm. And I think it was a blowout. It was not a good game.
It was a 15-point win.
Yeah. And the realization we had was like, you know what? The Clippers are just better. Mm-hmm. Like, this isn't even about anything else. Now, since then, teams have done the same kinds of things. And so that's, you know, like I was saying, it gets old to see the Mavericks, like, not respond to that same kind of defense. But like you said, you know, once they made that comeback, they found a way to play through it. Here's a question. Do you think they played better in the clutch tonight than they have the rest of the season?
I thought they made plays. They missed a couple of shots. The one shot that really hurt was the Tim shot.
Yeah.
I thought they played better in the clutch. They played like a normal team in the clutch. It's just the Clippers, again, Kawhi just made every single little fadeaway jumper there in the paint, and then the one time he makes a three is when it matters most, and that's just what Kawhi does.
Yeah.
And if it wasn't for that, if Kawhi misses one or two of those shots, it may be a different story.
Or if Hardaway makes that three.
That three, I think, really hurt because we made the clutch play with getting the steal. And Luka made the great pass with getting him a wide open.
It was wide open. Yeah.
And
it was in rhythm. It was a catch and shoot.
It was beautiful. That's one he makes 50 out of 51 times. And he's made that shot all season long. He just happened to miss it this one time. And then that's been the problem with the Mavericks. Their shooting percentages in the clutch time are just so poor.
Free throws, too.
The free throws are killing
them. Luka missed a free throw that by then,
it didn't matter.
The game
it
was pretty much over. But if he makes both of those, there's a little bit of hope. I thought they played better in the clutch tonight than they have the rest of the season. I mean, obviously they lost, but they didn't fall apart like they have been, you know. Yeah, like we went over their numbers, how they just, they're like the worst team in the league in the clutch. Tonight, like you said, it was kind of a normal game. They went back and forth. They played really great defense. It's just, it's Kawhi Leonard.
The
you
Clippers
know?
Just made more shots when they had to. I mean, yeah. Shamit, again, he made two threes there, and one of them was on a broken play where the Mavericks played really good defense on Kawhi. Kawhi basically lost the ball.
Yeah.
He just happened to get it right back, and it was a broken play, gave it to Shamit. He shot a three and drained it.
Yeah, Shamit was 5 for 8 on threes. They also hit a lot of free throws. Guys that aren't typically great free throw shooters. I know Zubac went 5 for 6 on free throws. Yeah. He's not a great free throw shooter. So they made the right plays. They make the plays that a winning team makes. Yeah. And you could say, like,
got 33 free throws.
Yeah. Well, you could say, like, this guy doesn't normally make these shots or whatever. But on a great team, it's a different guy that steps up. You know, that's not averaging more than 10 or 12 points, but he's the guy that steps up in that game. Well, and they had that.
But that's been the problem with the Mavericks is late in games. Again, the shot-making ability that these other teams are displaying, at some point, I feel like the percentages have to even out. And some of these shots that teams are making against the Mavericks, they're not going to make. And the Mavericks are going to win some of these games because I thought tonight they made all – their defense was great. Yeah. They just made every single shot down the court. And again, the percentages for us shooting just haven't gone the other way yet. I don't know. They got to play better. I think they just got beat by a better team.
Yeah.
But I thought they played well. I didn't feel like that they got punked like they did the last time.
Yeah, it wasn't as frustrating. There was a stretch, like I said, where I feel like the physical defense was getting to them like it always does. But they turned it around and they started playing a normal game and being aggressive and making shots. And so I feel like they kind of changed that narrative. We'll see what happens the next time this comes up. You mentioned how the Clippers had 33 free throws. The Mavericks had 24. You know, it's like no one likes a fan that blames the officials for losing a game. And obviously that's one of 10 things that went wrong in this game. But it happened.
I'm not blaming the officials, but
but it is a thing. Like, it is happening.
It's getting increasingly frustrating to watch, like, Kawhi on one of these dunks that he had, literally, it was an offensive foul.
Yeah, he
fouls Luka
in the face.
Yeah, and he gets the foul call. Yeah. And then that late in the game, Lou Williams just throws up a shot and they call a foul. And it's like, you know, on the other side of the court, we have to basically beg for a whistle.
Yeah.
And it's got to be a flagrant one in order for them to blow the whistle. Yeah. And the only thing I want to see is if you allow a team to play as physical on one end, allow them to play just as physical on the other. And for some reason especially against the LA teams, but it just is not happening for the Mavericks right now. And it does get frustrating. And yes, they shouldn't allow it to get to their head. But as a young team, when it continues to happen, like that one where Tim Hardaway had a wide open layup.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like the Clippers intentionally fouled him and hacked him across the arm. And you can hear the slap on the speakers.
Oh, in transition. Yeah.
And nothing. And it's like, did you not just hear it? Like, you know, and then yet on the other side, it'll be a ticky-tack and it'll be a whistle.
Yeah.
And it's just, that stuff does get increasingly frustrating. But you have to find a way to play through it. And the Mavericks continue to allow that to bother them.
See, and I think that's the problem is they allow it to affect
their play.
The quality of their play. At the same time, it's hard. Like, if it's a foul, it's a foul. And normally you would get free throws and maybe make those. That's 2 points on the board. That's not an intangible impact on the game. That is a real tangible impact. You're taking potential points away from the team.
And giving them to another team.
Yeah, and potentially giving it to the other team if you're calling it the other way. And it's just like, I don't know what to say anymore. It's like when teams play physically with the Mavs, it's like the purge. And it all just becomes a free-for-all. Like, teams can just do whatever they want and get away with it.
So I think the Mavericks, though, that's really not what's important. What's important is their mindset. They don't have this mindset as, I don't care what you do, you're not going to stop us.
Yeah, but and, if a guy is,
well, I get it. I know
his arm down across your arm,
and we saw that against the Lakers game where Luka was just getting
completely
hacked. There's
only so much you can do.
I get it. You know, I don't have an answer for it because, you know, when you watch the game, yes, we're Mavs fans, and I'm sure every single team probably says the same
we
thing.
We never get caught. It's like, no.
No.
Okay,
And it's funny when I see Doc Rivers or somebody on
the... Until you have a child.
and somebody on the Clippers complaining about it.
It's
like,
shut up.
You know, you guys are sitting
get
there...
every call.
Allowed to hack our guys to death.
Yeah.
And nothing. And then you want
it's
a
like,
tiny
hey,
little
he
whistle.
Traveled.
And that
first
one,
of all, he didn't travel.
That one they called on Lou Williams, where Lou Williams literally just acts like he gets hit and then throws it and they blew the whistle. It's ridiculous.
Or
you
it's
know?
Like flops or something. Yeah. Or it's calls that you could easily just do a no call, but they call the foul on the Mavs.
But see, outside of all of that, you know, the Mavericks, they still have to get this mindset as a team.
I know.
As the killer instinct. It doesn't matter what you do or what happens, we're gonna beat you. And they don't have that.
Yeah.
And the Clippers do. So, you know, we'll see. It is frustrating, but they have to find a way to win anyways. The calls will come around.
Yeah, I think what made it more frustrating is that I feel like it's the same thing in every game that they struggle in. I mean, obviously, they have really good games. I mean, they have a winning record. They're fifth in the West. There's more good times than bad times. But the times when they struggle, it's the same thing. It's officiating. It's physical defense. You know, teams getting away with whatever they want. And I think that just, you know, you get tired of seeing that same thing. I feel like, especially the physical defense, I wish that whether it's like a coaching adjustment or just a mental adjustment, I wish they responded better to that. And I know that they did in this game tonight. I don't know if they'll do that the next time.
I thought they did tonight, and I thought they did against Philadelphia. I thought Philadelphia came out with the same mindset, and they really were playing the Mavericks really physically. And I felt like in the second half, the Mavericks matched it. I think it's just taking them too long during the game to match. And I think thought the Mavericks started out well, matching the physical play. But as the game kind of wore on, the Clippers stayed that way.
Yeah.
And the Mavericks kind of had to re-get back into that. And so it's just not a natural play for them is to play really physical. And they're going to have to, like I said, to me, it's a mindset. You have to go into it. You just don't care. You know, Dirk would talk about how he used to hate the physical play when he was younger. But then he got to a point where he started to enjoy it. He liked when a guy was really physical on him because, you know, he kind of knew where he was going to be and what he could do. And Luka is going to have to really do the same thing.
Embrace it, yeah.
There was a shot of him tonight that I saw, and I saw his shoulder, and he's got cuts and scratches all over. And I'm like, I didn't see any whistles on any of those, you know.
Yeah.
But he's going to have to learn to, you know, all the superstars do. They all get played with a lot of physicality.
Mm-hmm.
And he's going to have to do the same thing, learn how to embrace the physicality and use it against them.
And also take pride in it, that a guy is busting his tail, fouling him at every step, and he still makes the shot.
Yeah.
You know, like you've talked before about the way that LeBron plays, like people play him physically because he's so big. I mean, they have to, but he's learned to make shots despite the contact.
Yeah.
And I mean, that, you know, when you're able to do that, it's a really good feeling, and it also pumps up your team a lot. But just like taking pride in being able to play through that. Now, how do you do that? You know, that's a whole other story.
We talked in the later segment that we recorded before the game how Luka learns so quickly. At some point, it's just going to click.
Yeah, or he's going to snap.
Yeah, well, that too. But at some point, it's just going to click, and he's going to get tired of it, and he's going to end it.
Yeah.
And then it'll be done for. Hopefully that happens this season, and it doesn't wait until like
another
a game seven, you know, loss in the playoffs. Yeah. So he'll figure it out. It's just they have to find this next level intensity that other teams are coming to their home court with. And they have to find a way to have that same intensity and take it to the team and just not care what kind of style that they're playing. We're just going to beat you. That kind of mentality. And they don't have that.
Reminds me of, this is a random thought, the year that the Mavs had the 500 beards when they were trying to get back to 500 and they were growing out a beard until they got there. The night that they had their first chance to get back to 500, it was a game against the Pacers. This was back when they still had Paul George. And the Pacers found out about it. And so they came into that game with... The Mavs had a ton of intensity. I mean, this is a huge mm-hmm. game for them. But the Pacers came in and just shut them down yep. and beat them. And I remember you saying, like, that's what a good team does. Like, I don't care how much you want this. I don't care how much you fight mm-hmm. for it. I don't care how many times you foul me. I'm going to make this bucket. I'm going to make every single one until we win.
Yeah, and I think that's what the Mavericks have to learn. And we talked about, you know, Carlisle playing the young guys and maybe not overreacting to these kinds of losses mm-hmm. because we looked at their entire starting lineup and none of them have ever been on a winning team in the NBA.
Yeah.
And so they don't know how to win.
Yeah.
And so really what this is doing when they lose to teams like the Clippers, it's galvanizing them.
Well, they learn what it takes.
Yeah, exactly. And yeah. and so hopefully if you keep the core together, they will learn these things and they will be that team. They will be what the Clippers did tonight. They will go on the road to Utah or whatever and just say, hey, we're just gonna win. They've done that at times on the road yeah. for some reason.
Yeah.
But I think that's more of a result of the Mavericks playing at a high, like kind of surprising teams a little bit on the road. I don't think teams are really quite ready for the intensity that the Mavs play with.
You expect that at home.
Yeah. And at yeah. home though, there, I think teams teams are coming here with a higher level of intensity. Because it's Dallas and because Luka and he's getting all the media attention and they just want to end it.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, it's happening. We're not coming with that same. We're 13-11 at home.
Yeah.
You know, and like 22-1 on the road.
Yeah, it's not really,
but, you know.
Yeah, I got you. Yeah, it's frustrating that you know, which they'll grow into. I get that the officiating, some like during this game, I was like, I don't know if I can watch this. I mean, it gets old. I just don't want to watch it anymore. It's so maddening. I don't know how these players go out there and just play. I mean, obviously they yell at the refs, but if I were out there, I would freaking get a chair and like throw it. It's so maddening. Maybe
you can see the frustration with the players. Like even sometimes where they're not complaining, they're just shaking their head.
Yeah. Well, sometimes Luka's face, he's just fuming.
And it's because, you know, it's a foul. Like that one where Tim Hardaway gets fouled
on
the fast break.
Or when Kawhi is pulling Luka's shorts. And
it's like,
or when he shot the three and he yelled for a foul and then he airballed it.
And it's like,
clearly he was fouled.
Yeah, you know, just
and the ref is just like, oh yeah, okay.
Yeah, but I'll get you next time.
But it never happens. And that's the thing is like, they'll talk to the ref will be like, yeah, you know, missed it or whatever. But then they never take that forward. They still just never call a foul going forward in it. And so
in officiating in the NBA is weird. You know, it's like they reward good teams.
There's so many psychological games.
And it's like, can't you just, if it's a foul,
just call it.
But, you know, I don't want to spend too much time because the officiating did not determine the game tonight. It's the Mavericks it's the way they respond. They just don't have that killer instinct yet.
Yeah.
And hopefully they'll develop that killer instinct. But I don't know, that three by Tim, you know, I thought was a huge shot. And Tim's been playing great this year, and he just happened to miss it.
Yeah, it's one time. The next time,
he'll probably swish it. Yeah. And he's hit big shots this season.
Yeah.
It just happened to miss that one. And again, they don't have the killer instinct. They don't have that mindset where we're just going to beat you. We don't care what you do. And the Clippers do have that mindset.
Yeah, because they're all veterans.
Yeah, because they got to the luxury of having two superstars join their teams. Yeah, and they didn't have to fight for anything.
Yeah. Well, and most of them have playoff experience.
Yeah, they're
Kawhi
veterans.
Leonard is a finalist MVP. So yeah, their progression, they're way ahead of the Mavericks. You know, not just talent level. I mean, they have some players that are better, but just their experience is so much more.
Yeah, I would say what the Mavericks need to work on would be consistent intensity and killer instinct.
And free throws.
Well, that comes with killer instinct.
Yeah, true.
You know, all the shot making, the free throws, it's like you make them because you have to, and that's a mindset that they just don't have.
Yeah. So anyway, those are our thoughts on the game. Let us know what you guys thought. We're going to go on to some other segments where we talk about Porzingis. Now, he was back in this game, which was really good to see. But we still have some thoughts on just that time that he was out. And it was really weird. So let's get on to that segment now. So the Mavs play tonight. We're recording this before the Clippers game. Kristaps Porzingis is playing, at least for now, unless something changes before the game.
It's 7:06, and he's still on.
And he's still on, yeah. He's been out for, 10 games?
10 games, yeah. Which, in retrospect, it really isn't. Let's say he finishes the season with only not playing back-to-backs.
Yeah.
You know, we're not going to remember this 10 games that he was out.
I mean, in retrospect, like, if you take it a couple years from now,
just the end of the season.
Yeah, yeah, I guess it depends on how the season ends.
Yeah, I mean, every player,
like, say this is the only stretch he misses, it's not a big deal.
It's so rare that a player plays all 82 games, especially in today's league. So, you know, I think in 2 weeks, and he's playing fine, nobody's going to remember. Yeah.
Well, and I've tweeted this, and I might have mentioned it on the pod, that if you look at guys returning from a torn ACL,
they miss a lot of games.
They played an average of like 60 to 65 games. Yeah. So this is
And my main theory was that because it's well known that if you have an injury on one side, you overcompensate on the other side, and you end up injuring yourself even more on the opposite side. Since his opposite knee was his torn ACL knee,
The opposite of one that's sore right now.
Yeah. That's why I think the Mavericks were like, not until it's 100%, because we don't want you overcompensating to the knee that you had a torn ACL and re-injuring.
Which he might have been doing that already. That could have been why it was sore. Yeah. Now, one thing that has come out of this that surprised me is there have been a lot of Mavs fans who like leave comments on the YouTube videos and they tweet at me, and they're like totally done with Porzingis. Several of them, I thought they were kidding at first, but I think they're serious. They want to trade him.
I don't.
Because of this stretch that he's been out. They're frustrated.
I've supported Twitter people a lot in the past.
Twitter people, the Twitters.
I've supported them because a lot of times how they feel ends up being what happens. Now, maybe not that night when they're ranting on what they're seeing, you know, Doncic needs to play the fourth and all those kind of things. Yeah. It eventually happens because what we're seeing is sometimes true, but
or sometimes they're just feeling emotional. Yes. It's, you know,
it's okay.
It's a really spur of the moment kind of platform. You have to make allowances for that.
This, for me, I cannot support you if you, I mean, come on, think about this for more than 5 minutes. Look how the interior of our team, the defense has been since Porzingis has been out. It's been a layup line for opposing teams. Luka's had to work a lot harder to get his shots because Porzingis' geometry isn't
his gravity. The gravity of his geometry.
It's not on the court, and so he's got those extra players. And no, we need Porzingis. He's a special player, and he's just not Luka.
Well, and this is, I think their point is that, yes, the Mavericks need him, obviously, but they feel that he's this injury, it's lasted so long that maybe it is true what everyone says, how he's never going to play more than 55 games or whatever, and he's always going to be hurt. And if that's the case, they don't want to mess with
it. I don't think the Mavericks sign him to a 5-year deal if that's the case. If they looked at his knees, it's kind of like when they looked at Andrew Bynum. Yeah. They brought Andrew Bynum. They looked at his knees and were like, no.
No.
These things are...
Or like Malcolm Brogdon.
Yeah.
He apparently had feet problems.
So I think they looked at his knees like, same thing. And they looked at him and they said it was fine. You know, let's go ahead and sign him. I just don't think they would have signed him. I think he's going to be... They're going to be really cautious with him because of the history. But if he plays 70 games this year, I mean, what more could you ask for?
I mean, if he's missed 10, plus he's already missed games before that, so he might not get to 70, especially if he continues to not play back-to-backs.
Yeah, true. But you know what I'm saying. Especially his first year back.
Yeah.
Everybody expected really the first 30 games of the season that he was going to play like 20 of them.
Yeah.
And he ended up playing a lot more.
And that's kind of my point, is how it's his first year back from the torn ACL. And we've said before that this season is probably not going to be an indication of what he's going to be like for the rest of his career. And I mean, yes, that's an assumption. Like, I might be wrong about that, in which case that's fine. But just based on history, we can make the assumption that this isn't what he's going to be like for the rest of his career. And so I think it's like he had rehabbed for so long. It's his first year here. We've never seen him in any other way. I think sometimes it's just easy to forget the injury. It happened so long ago that you kind of just expect him to come back and be like a normal player. And obviously, as we can see, that's just not how it works. But yeah, I was surprised that people were so done already. And I mean, don't get me wrong, I've been frustrated, you know, when he's like, he's playing and then he's not playing. I mean, and he's fine and then he's not. And okay, it's frustrating.
That happened one game, you know, like, and people are overreacting.
Yeah, well,
like,
he's been day to day for like 2 weeks.
Well, and it's because they just want to make sure it's 100%. Yeah. Look, none of us are in the locker room. We're not, we don't have contacts with Rick Carlisle or the staff. This is just an assumption. But my assumption was there's no need to have him play hurt.
Yeah.
Not injured, but just hurt. There's no need
in
to risk
it. In some way.
Yeah. His first year back, let's be very cautious with it. Make sure he's 100% when he's out there. Let's get him a full season at least. You know, he's going to play, I think after February something will be the most longest he's played or something like that. So we'll see what happens. Obviously, I love Porzingis. I love his attitude. I love the fact that he's with the Mavericks, and we've needed him in these last 10 games. It's shown how much we need him.
So you think that this is just a blip on the timeline, that it's not going to be a regular thing, even for the rest of the season?
Well, I don't think he's playing back-to-backs anymore.
Okay.
And I think they will do more load management with him. They kind of threw out the load management early on in the season because everything was going so well.
Yeah.
And I think in hindsight, if they can go back, they probably would redo that and do their regular scheduled load management that they were going to do for him. But because everything looked so good, everything was going so well, they didn't. But I think you'll see load management for the rest of the year. He won't play on the second night of back-to-backs. His minutes will probably be under 30, maybe 28, 29 for the rest of the season. But as far as like just a standard injury where his knee just goes out, I don't see. I hope that doesn't happen.
Here's another question. Do you think for the rest of his career, he'll be kind of like a Kawhi Leonard kind of guy, the way that he is now, where like last year, Leonard played 60 games out of 82. That's not a lot. This year, he's played 33 out of a possible, I'm assuming 41 to maybe 40 to 42 games. Do you think they should do that with Porzingis?
Which is the same pace, by the way.
Yeah, yeah. Just, you know, sit him out for 15 to 20 games a season as needed.
I don't know if they would do the same, but you have to consider it because you're wanting to extend the guy's career. What I was thinking more probably the back half of Dirk's career where he would play about 30 minutes a night, wouldn't play on the second night of back-to-backs. But really, it's and short spurts of minutes.
Yeah.
You know, he was never out on the court for a long time. I think that's probably the direction that you would go in with Porzingis. That way, you know, he's out on the court every game for the most part.
Mm-hmm.
But it's just shorter minutes and less minutes so his career can be extended.
Yeah. Well, and that's so, again, comparing him to Kawhi, last year he averaged 34 minutes a game. This year he's averaging 32. So
Porzingis or Kawhi?
Kawhi Leonard. Yeah. So if the Mavericks did any sort of load management program long term, I don't know if it would look exactly like that, but do you think, like, could you see them doing that to where not even like if he feels fine or even beyond this season, just like, you know what, you're never going to play more than 65 games just because we don't think it's necessary and you can't handle it?
Yeah, I mean, they would know. I mean, with all the research they've done, they probably look at genetics, they look at play style, they look at body type, they look at movement, they look at so much. They can probably now look at a player, take in all this information and say, hey, his body's going to break down if he plays X amount of minutes.
Yeah.
And they can probably do that with Porzingis and say maybe 70 games or 67 games a year is really the max. No back-to-backs, 30 minutes a night.
Well, sorry.
Yeah, and if that helps him to play for the next 13, 14, 15 years, then you absolutely should do that. The other way is if you play him 36 minutes a night, he may have two or three seasons in a row where he doesn't have an injury. But, you know, in season number four, he tears his ACL again, except on the other knee. And then he goes two seasons with no injury. And then again, you know, he breaks his ankle or something. Jeez, these are really gruesome injuries.
I was going to say, why are you doing this to Porzingis? And you say it like, and then he tears his ACL.
Like,
no,
it's nothing.
That's not okay.
But my point is, you know, if it extends his career, then you absolutely should do it.
Yeah, and like, I don't know if that's what they're going to do. I was just trying to think of another guy that's kind of in a comparable situation. So let's say hypothetically, that's what happened. Like, for the rest of his career, he played 67 games a season. Would you be okay with that?
If I mean, if he stayed healthy all season, but he just did load management games, then yeah, I would be okay with that. I mean, fans may not accept that, but you got to understand, you know, this guy's body type can't handle whatever.
And I guess it, for me, ultimately depends on if you're winning or not. Like, if you're a 500 team and he can't play more than 60 games, it's like, well, I mean, is it?
Really, I guess at that point, it depends on how much you're paying him.
Yeah. And also, what are the other, like, who else they have on the team? Like, there's a lot of factors. But ultimately, the goal is to win. And so, if he helps you to do that, then yes, it makes sense.
And I think the goal also, especially for the Mavericks, is to extend players' careers.
Yeah. Well, and what you said about, you know, being able to study his body to see what he can handle, we've already seen Carlisle talk about that with Barea. There was a season where I think he was the starting point guard, and Carlisle said, you know, yeah, he's playing really well, but we really shouldn't be playing in this many minutes because he's going to get hurt. And it was like hurt. Maybe a week after that, he started having problems with his hamstring.
Or his calf.
Or something, he said the same thing this year about Kleba. We would like to play him more minutes, but we just don't think his body can handle it. So,
and we saw the first 2 years, every couple weeks, he would miss a couple games because his knee just was a bone bruise in it, you know, in his knee.
Yeah, so I think they can study the player's body and see, like, what he can handle. So maybe they'll do that with Porzingis. Speaking of this time that he's been out, does it bother you that he was at the fight the other night?
No.
Yeah. Somebody brought that up to me on Twitter, and I was like, I don't really care.
What if the fight was in Dallas and he went?
I don't know. I don't know what it is. I don't know if it's because he went out and had fun, or is it because he had because he had to travel, or is it because it's like you should be home rehabbing? I don't really know what it is, but it's,
to me,
it's like, I mean, they said it's a sore knee. That means he can walk and probably play if he needed to, but he's just not, so he can go somewhere to a fight. Like, I don't know. It didn't really bother me.
Yeah,
like,
I mean,
I know that he's been working with the trainers. Carlisle talks about it every day. He goes through practices. It's not like he said he had the flu and then they saw him at the fight. It's, you know,
it's not like Dennis Smith where he called in sick and then was at a restaurant.
So, I mean, like, I know he's working with the training staff and he just went out. He can still walk and function.
It doesn't matter.
He went out. Yeah.
It
didn't bother me.
It doesn't matter what event he would have been seen at. People would have had a problem with it.
Yeah. Anyways. So that's Kristaps. He's coming back tonight. We'll see how he does. Like you said, the Mavericks do really need him. Their interior defense has just been
been a layup line.
Yeah. Not good enough. All right. Let's move on. Mark Cuban recently did an interview with Oliver Maroney for Big 3 Network. It's on YouTube, so you can search for it. It's like a 20-minute interview. He talks about a lot of things. One of those things he talks about was drafting Luka, and he talked about the draft night and what it's like. And he was saying that Luka was their guy, and they would have done pretty much anything to get him. So they did the trade with Atlanta. And then he was like, as soon as we got him, we were really excited. And then we were also terrified because there's the fear of what if we don't get our guy? And then there's a fear of once you get your guy, what if he's not what you thought?
Yeah.
And, you know, I remember that it was like Luka was the only guy that I really liked in the draft. I mean, I kind of liked DeAndre Ayton, but Luka was the only guy that I thought would be a superstar. But so when they got him, I was so happy. But then it's like, God, what if he's not actually this guy that we thought he was going to be? And obviously he's turned out to be everything
more
plus
than,
more.
Yeah. Well, especially with, for some reason, Euros are the only guys that bust in the draft, which is ridiculous. Like 99% of the draft doesn't make it in the league for more than 5 years. So they're all bust. But for some reason, Euros have the highest chance of being.
They're the only ones that get remembered.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. Yeah. So,
like, Darko Milicic is the only lottery pick that's been a buzz.
But you know how many number two picks since him that are not even in the league anymore?
Yeah.
But he's the only one that... Yeah. So I think because of the fact that he was a Euro, it had extra attention to it. What if he was a bust? They would have never dropped it.
Yeah.
You know, it would have, you know, so I can see the fear with that. And then you have some, I don't want to call him a talent evaluator because he's a complete imbecile, but Rashad Phillips, who said, don't be the guy that gets fired for drafting Luka Doncic.
Well, and he also, even now, how did he put it? Oh, yeah. Inflation.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Yes.
There's an inflation of stats in the league right now because of the way that the game is played, and Luka benefits from that inflation.
But Trae Young
doesn't. Yeah,
look, like, I agree that teams...
Because this guy likes Trae Young.
Yeah, I agree that teams score more and they play faster.
Yeah, they shoot more threes, more possessions.
But you can do simple research to do per 100 possessions, which takes away the pace of the game.
Yeah.
And you would see clearly that Luka is one of the best players in the league and really having one of the best seasons ever.
Well, and also he's not the only one.
Yeah.
The entire league is playing at this pace, shooting threes. Now, some teams shoot more threes than others. I get that. But, you know, and he, you know, this guy, he's really big on Trae Young. And it's like, so... Luka benefits from this so-called inflation, but not anyway. It's...
Yeah, well, his reasoning was, I know we're kind of off topic
here, it just
but his reasoning was Trae Young averaged what he averaged.
No.
What he's doing right now, he did in college.
Yeah. Whereas
Luka averaged 12 points a game in Europe.
And then he came to the NBA, he's doing this.
Which, first of all, shows a complete lack of understanding of the European game. Not only are the games shorter, players play less minutes, it's a completely different style of basketball. But regardless, that in no way shows
well,
that
Luka... Well, and also, I would expect a player to get better from college to the... It's like,
if
so
Trae
all
Young...
you're saying is Trae Young is the same player he was in college.
Despite inflation.
This is his second season. I would want him to be better than that. Anyways, that was a tangent.
But that was the cloud around... That's a cloud around European players.
Well, or they would... And, you know, at the time they said, he was pro, but in Europe. That's a trash league. None of that counts. It doesn't matter. And now they say, like, well, this isn't fair. He's been pro since he was 13.
Yeah, it's hilarious.
And it's like,
he gets younger every time, too.
Yeah, yeah. And it's like, okay, now he had a competitive advantage because he was pro. Whereas before the draft, everyone was like,
trash.
Nah, that doesn't matter. Yeah.
Yeah.
One thing that Cuban brought up that I know you've pointed to as a big moment was the Sacramento game just last week, last Wednesday, I think. In that game, Luka was really struggling from the three-point line. Mm-hmm. In fact, he had been struggling for a while. I looked at the numbers, and in the 11 games before that game, he was 29 for 93 on three-pointers. That's 31%. He was in a real slump. The four games before that, he was 5 of 24 on three-pointers. That's 21%. And in this game, he started 0 for 5.
Yeah.
And what Cuban talked about was that normally when that happens, he would just keep forcing it. And we've seen that in the past. But he said in that game, he stopped doing that. He really, like, tried to affect the game in other ways. And so... again, he stopped shooting threes, but also, so in the four games before that, he was averaging 7 assists. In that game, he had 17.
His career high 17.
Yeah. Four games before that, he was averaging 8.7 rebounds. In that game, he had 15.
Mm-hmm.
So he said that was a big moment where he stopped forcing it and he was just like, let me see how else I can affect the game. And the thing is, he's so skilled in so many areas that he really doesn't need to force it. Like, he's so much more than just shooting threes.
Yeah, Jason Kidd used to, you would look at the box score or his stats after a game and it was like he didn't do anything. But when you watch the game, Jason Kidd used to dominate the game.
Without even shooting.
Without scoring, yeah. And sometimes even without getting high assists, because Jason Kidd was really good at moving the ball. Even if it wasn't directly to the guy that was going to score, he just moved it to where the ball needed to go, and it helped the offense go. So he would dominate a game. And I thought Luka did the same thing in that one. And I tweeted about that the next day because I thought that when he went 0 for 5 and then he didn't shoot another one for the entire second half, he didn't shoot a three. And I thought it was a big moment too, because he recognized, you know what? They're not falling tonight. I'm not going to force it. So I'm just going to play my game. He's so good driving to the lane.
Yeah.
And you know,
at everything.
Yeah, really, exactly. Yeah. And so, yeah, I agree. I thought that was a big moment. And then I thought in the next game where his three was going in, he shot it a little bit more, and he had a career high 8 threes.
Yeah.
I think what he kind of learned, if his three's going in, jack him up.
Yeah.
If because he's kind of streaky.
Yeah.
You know, he'll hit 5 in a row. If they're not going in, stop shooting them.
Yeah.
And that's kind of been the frustration with him, is when they're not going in, he keeps shooting them. You don't want him to turn into a James Harden 1-for-17 from the 3-point line. So as soon as he shot his 5th one, it didn't go in. He's like, I'm done with this. I'm not going to hurt my team by continuing to rack these up. They're just not going in tonight.
Yeah, well, like, if you look at these shooting lines from the previous 11 games, from the 3-point line, he had a game where he went 3-for-16,
mm-hmm.
one where he went 5-for-15, and then several, 1-for-7, 1-for... So he was, like, just shooting a ton and not making any of them. And I know, like, Mavs fans have been frustrated about that. I don't think we mean it in a way like Luka sucks or we're tired of him or whatever. But it was one of those things where his shot wouldn't be falling, and it was like he would just keep forcing up shots. And it's like, dude, you're so good at so many other things.
Yeah.
You don't have to do that.
And I think that's more of just him...
He's
being
young.
Yeah. And but I think, honestly, you know, Luka is so interesting, because when he learns something, he usually learns it at the weirdest times.
Mm-hmm.
And he learns it, and then he moves on, and it's never a problem anymore. And for this one, I think that moment, like Cuban said, it was a big moment. It just kind of clicked in his head. And I think going forward, we should see a lot less times when he's just jacking up threes whenever they're not going in. He's always going to have a game or two like that, but you just don't want that to be a regular occurrence.
Yeah, that reminds me. I think it was in an interview with Mike Procopio, who is player development with the Mavs. And I think it was him. He said that Luka is such a fast learner,
mm-hmm.
because he said things that would normally take a player, you know, maybe a few months or even a couple of seasons to learn, Luka just picks up on so quickly, like within just a few games. And we kind of saw that with the defense, like with the way they were doubling him, he adjusted mm-hmm. to that pretty quickly. And a lot of that was probably coaching too. But then with this also, it was like, we just kept seeing like he would just jack up these bad threes. Like mm-hmm. they weren't even good shots. So to see him make that adjustment, I think was, assuming he continues that, was a big moment in his career.
Well, the part that you have to learn is to resist, because the temptation is always step back, pull up, contested 3-point shooter, hero ball type of shot.
Yeah.
And especially with a person like him who feels like he's going to make it every single time. And we've seen players in the past, the ones that continue to shoot bad shots, they never really advance in the playoffs. Russell Westbrook is one of those where he would try to do Steph Curry type shots. And from 1 out of 10 games, he'd make it. But the other 9, he'd keep shooting it and they'd lose.
Yeah.
And it's like, at some point you got to recognize that's just not a good shot for you. For another player, it might be, but for him, it wasn't. And Luka, he's, you know, kind of similar in that regard, except he recognized right away, or now, hopefully going forward, that if it's not going in, it's a bad shot. And I think he knows that even when he shoots it and it misses. And he's commented after the game how he just shot bad shots.
Yeah.
But the temptation is to continue to do it.
Because when it goes in,
it's awesome.
It's such a good... Yeah. But
you have to resist.
I thought that was a big thing. Because also it's a lot of like the thing that people say all the time, take what the defense gives you. And so it's like, if you don't have a good look, you know, just pass it on or see if you can get someone else involved. Like, and that, you know, coupled with that he is so good at so many other things, he really doesn't need to force it because he can be he can just switch to doing something else and dominate at that, even if he's not making his three.
When he has so many weapons in his tool bag, and he'll go through stretches where he utilizes one until teams kind of catch up on it.
Yeah.
And then he doesn't use it for a long time. For example, he has this hesitation where he's going down full speed, stops, fakes back, and then goes forward again full speed. He'll do that like in six games in a row, and he'll get a bucket, and then you won't see it again for like 25 games. Mm. Likewise with his floater. He's got an excellent floater, but he'll use it for about three games, and then he won't do it for a long time. And it's like, dude, you have that floater there. Yeah. You know, I don't. Did you forget how to use it?
Same thing with the inside ball fake, where he'll be at the rim, and if the big man has closed out, he'll do the ball fake. Mm-hmm. But then now they don't fall for it anymore, so he kind of stopped doing that.
Yeah, and I think the maturation of Luka will be eventually he'll learn how to utilize all of these
at the right time.
Yes, exactly. And so he won't just use them for a time. He'll have them in his bag for every single game. So that way he always has leverage.
Yeah. So after their game against Portland, both Carmelo and Damian Lillard they had a lot of praise for Luka. Carmelo said, he said he's a walking bucket. He said it's going to continue to get better and better. He said, I hope people in Dallas appreciate what they have in front of them, which I think we do.
Oh, Carmelo said Luka was a walking bucket? I thought Luka said that about Carmelo.
He did. Oh, and then they told Carmelo, and he was like, he's a walking bucket.
Yeah. Okay, that's right. I remember that.
But yeah, I think we appreciate what we have in Luka. I mean, I'm sure I've heard some fans who are like, we're better when Luka didn't play or something.
Yeah, because those guys aren't very bright.
I mean, you know, maybe they just get caught up in the moment, but I think we appreciate it. I appreciate it.
I think the Mavs as an organization do. Yeah, I think they're going to give him whatever he wants.
Yeah. Damian Lillard said that Luka is arguably the MVP. He said because he's playing at a high level and the Mavericks are winning. And I thought this was interesting. He didn't say he's their MVP, as in like the Mavericks MVP, or that he's an MVP candidate. He said he is arguably the MVP. Like, well, do you think he meant that? Did he really mean that?
Well, I mean, he's probably just singing high praise of him. Obviously, if he had his pick, he would probably pick
himself.
No, he'd probably pick Giannis like most people would. Yeah, and with all due respect to Luka, Giannis is probably the MVP this year.
Yeah, I mean,
their team is 37-2.
Two.
But Doncic, I think what he's doing is kind of fizzled away as far as how huge it is, how great it is.
Yeah.
I mean, he's averaging 29 points, 9.6 points, and 8.8 assists. Those are huge numbers, and if LeBron put up 29-9-9, he would win MVP, hands down. And not only that, the Mavericks are winning, and nobody expected, other than us, nobody expected them. A lot of people, even local media, said they would go 42-41 games was their over-under.
Not because they don't believe in the Mavs.
But just talent-wise.
When you looked at it.
But Luka has been so dominant that, you know, he's definitely up there.
I think part of it, like what you were saying, how it doesn't get as much attention, and not that Luka still gets a ton of attention. Yes, I'm not going to be like, no one ever talks about him, because they do.
They go crazy.
But I think just in the past few weeks, it hasn't been so much, because I think he has kind of been in a slump. I mean, we talked about his three-point shooting. We talked about his three-point shooting, but, you know, also his assists and rebounds. Like, you know, he's had some games where just wasn't great, you know, where he had two assists or seven assists, you know, scored 19 points, 20 points, you know. So he's had some games in the past couple weeks that just weren't great. And so I think that kind of, it was a little bit shaky. I mean, especially with Porzingis out too.
Yeah. And every player, this season is long.
Yeah.
And so to expect him to average a triple-double every month is just not likely, you know. So
it's not a coincidence that the month he did that was like the first month when it's fresh.
But, you know, who knows? Maybe in March he gets on a hot streak again and does the same thing. And then, you know, everybody will be flipping out about him again. But
yeah, I don't think he's the MVP this year.
No.
But he's an MVP candidate.
Now, if the Mavericks somehow get to like the third seed and he's averaging 29-9-9, you know, he would have to be the number two guy. Like Giannis would still be number one, but Luka's definitely the second best player in the league this year.
I think Luka will be a perennial MVP candidate.
Yeah.
I don't know if he'll ever win MVP because...
Oh, he's gonna.
But there's only one guy that wins it, and
it's going to be him.
If you happen to be like, if Giannis is like this and the Bucks are like this for the next 10 years, it's just...
But even Jordan didn't win
true.
It every
yeah,
year. You know, Jordan
true,
only
yeah.
won five, and really, he probably should have won it every year. But at some point, they were just well, like, you know, we got to give it to somebody else.
And how many did Kobe win?
One.
Yeah. So, I mean, know. It's just, it's
but,
not always...
But let's not compare Jordan and Kobe here.
No, I'm just saying, you know, a guy like Kobe, you would think, and he probably was a perennial MVP and candidate, but it's just, there's so many guys, and
you
only
give
one
it,
guy wins it.
And really, they treated Kobe early on as if he was... Like, as if he had already won four or five. Because at that time when he won, the years before that, I think it was pretty unanimous. People thought he was the best player in the league.
Mm-hmm.
And so when MVP came voting, like, it was like, okay, Kobe's the best. Who's the second best? Yeah. That's the MVP.
Yeah.
And he got treated that way for a long time until he finally,
they
they're like, oh, crap.
Granted. Yeah.
He actually hasn't won one of these. Let's give it to him.
Yeah. So, yeah, I don't think he is this year. But I think he will be a candidate for a long time. And, I mean... He probably will win at least one, but we'll have to see.
Oh, I agree.
So that's it for this episode. Thank you guys so much for listening. Feel free to tweet us on Twitter. Let us know your thoughts on the loss, what you think the Mavericks can do better. Remember, you can listen to this episode and all episodes on DallasHoopsCast.com. Today, I published part three of in our series of the 40 greatest moments in Dallas Mavericks history. So that has numbers 11 through 20. And then part four, which will have the top 10 greatest moments in Mavs history, will be published probably sometime this week. So make sure you check in for that. Again, thanks for listening, and we'll see you guys in the next episode. Bye.